Okay, people, it is part two of day seven of our Sci-Fi London 2023 film coverage. And as promised to you, right, we looked at recently, the other day, we looked at a film called The Warm Season. It was great, right? And yeah, the writer of that same film, he, you know, liked the review. We had a little conversation, and he decided to jump on an episode. So we have a great conversation. We did have to cut it short, you know, child minding shit came up, but it was a fun one. So we did cover a lot of stuff. You don't want to miss it, people. So I'm going to let you get to it right now. Let's go. Okay, people, so I am happy to be joined by Adam Seidel, the writer of The Warm Season. Yes, we looked at The Warm Season the other day, and now we got Adam to talk about everything about that film. Adam, thank you for joining me, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man, it's an honor to be here.
Hey, no, I just appreciate you checking out the review and being down for jumping on, man. So you're a playwright, right? And yeah, if I'm right, this is your first film script.
Yeah, well, I've written maybe like five or six screenplays at this point. This is the first one that's been produced, which is, you know, freaking dope. But yeah, so the past, God, I guess it's been like 12, 13 years at this point, which is kind of terrifying. I've been a playwright, and, you know, I've had stuff like done in New York, stuff done in LA, and that's been like super awesome. I was, you know, it was like 2019 and I was living in New York, and, you know, obviously like the pandemic came, and my wife and I, coincidentally, before, you know, all hell broke loose, we made the decision to move back to Wisconsin, which is where we're both from. And, you know, we already had like a daughter who at the time was two, and now we have a son, and he was, you know, like cooking in the oven. So we were like, oh shit, we gotta like figure out our life. And we went back to Wisconsin, and, you know, the theater world kind of fell apart in, you know, globally, really. And, you know, my career was sort of like getting some heat, and that kind of fell apart globally. So I was like, oh shit, you know, what am I gonna do now? And I had these screenplays. I think at that point I had like three screenplays that I had just written because, you know, I wanted to write one. And one of them was the Warm Season. And it was in a much different form at the time. It was a thing I'd written maybe I'd written it like 6 years prior to, you know, just putting it on the shelf and being like, you know, I just lost interest. I didn't know what to do with it. So, you know, you just sort of put something away. So pandemic, I'm sitting there on my computer being like, what am I going to do? And I saw, you know, the file for it. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll just read it for the hell of it. And I was like, oh shit, I think there is something here. I just necessarily didn't know how to do it 6 years ago when I was still kind of like learning how to write, but there's definitely some balls here. And let's dive back in. And that was kind of the start of it. And here we are now talking about it. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, before we get to the film, there's a few questions, right? So firstly, you become a playwright. Now, because, you know, there's a lot of times people do something, but the intention is to get to somewhere else.
Yeah.
So was the playwriting the thing? Was that like, you know, I mean, if there was no pandemic, you'd still be doing playwriting?
I think so. I mean, it was... So I got into playwriting when I was living in Chicago, and this is like, I guess, 15 years ago at this point. I was living in Chicago, and, you know, there's this thing, Second City, you know, which is kind of like a feeder for Saturday Night Live. And, you know, it's like comedy, sketch comedy. And I saw a friend's show that he wrote there. And, you know, I'm sitting in the audience. At the time, I was a critic for hip hop. I was a hip hop, you know, I went to like live shows in Chicago. Oh.
We will revisit that. My friend.
Yeah. Cause I'm like a huge, now I'm like a 40 something dad. So I've kind of lost my razor edge, but yeah, I was like huge into the hip hop scene and covering it in Chicago. But anyway, so I was doing that and I went to this show at Second City and I saw my buddy's show and I saw, you know, these jokes that characters were saying, like hitting and the audience just loving it. And it just like slapped me across the face. And I was like, you know, fuck, this is what I have to do. So I sort of like dropped everything I was doing with journalism and went through the writing program at Second City. And that turned sketch comedy, turned into one act plays, turned into full length plays. And, you know, it's like one of those things in life you can't really quantify or explain why you do something. There's just some bizarre like fuse inside of you that just like ignites when a certain thing hits you. And so, yeah, so plays are the thing. I love writing plays. I love how theater is, you know, like a live shared experience with an audience. You know, I mean, a bad play can also be just like horrific, but that can be almost as fun as a good play. But yeah, so I would like to get back to that as well. But yeah, right now, I mean, screenplays are cool. So I'm into it.
Okay. Yeah. Now, with a play, right? Yeah. Because I've seen a lot of different plays on a lot of different size stages.
Mm-hmm.
So is that something that you have to consider when writing? Because, you know, I went to the National Theatre and saw Small Island. Mm-hmm. And the way they handled the transitions was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But then I saw Ocean at the End of the Street. Is it Ocean? And Ocean? Mm. The Neil Gaiman book that got adapted. So, okay. And that was, I want to say the Lyric Theatre, but I might be wrong. Mm. But it was the stage was so small.
Mm-hmm.
But then the way they handled the movement and transitions in that was just, man, it blew your mind, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'm always wondered as a writer,
mm-hmm.
when you're writing something like that, do you think to yourself, okay, right, I'm thinking about movement, transitions, so this would be the type of stage this should be on, or are you just writing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the piece. And I maybe it's different for everyone, but for me, sometimes I'm almost like transcribing something I'm seeing in my head. So, and when I'm writing a play, I am like seeing it as a play. So I'm seeing it on a stage. Mm-hmm. And yeah, sometimes you're like, this is like taking place on an alley, like a bare alley, you know, where it's just characters looking at each other.
Yeah.
Or you're like, this is taking place, you know, on a thrust. And I see it as, you know, three or four sets, but it's on like a table. So, you know, you're like, oh, and then you kind of justify in your head. That's how I can be like, oh, yeah, you know, that's why I have like 15 scenes in 15 different places. And, you know, that's like the $5 million production that will never get produced. But, you know, it's like, you know, you go to like Roundabout Theater in New York and you see like, you know, you see that insane production where it's that writer who's earned the right to have a production where they can say, okay, we go from a barbershop to a bus station to a cemetery. Mm. And, you know, the scenic designer just like pulls that off. So I don't know. I think like in your head, you just kind of have to like go with it and not be afraid to be like, no, it can't be that because it will never be produced. So I can only write things that are like in one setting. I mean, you know, it's kind of like a balance between being realistic and dreaming. You know, and I do find when I start to get in my own head about like, well, no, you can't write this because it's too extravagant or because of this or because of that, then that actually just hurts the story, and then the story never gets born in the first place.
Mm.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. And did the advent of technology change the approach? You know, being able to kind of backlight and project, and now you've got green screen and, you know, new kind of different things to make, you know, creating more settings a little bit easier. Did that then impact the writing experience at all?
I mean, I think for some people, for sure, because, you know, it's just more of like that thing of saying, you know, if you can dream it up, we can execute it. Whereas before, you know, with like Noel Coward and Eugene O'Neill, you know, like they didn't necessarily have that. But I don't think that necessarily held them back either. You know, I just saw a play. I was back in New York for some stuff actually with the film. And it was Cynthia Mace, who plays the mom, Carlene. She was in, what was it? It's like it's this theater company that produces like, you know, rarely produced plays by famous writers.
And okay.
Noel Coward's, I forget the name of it, which is so silly, but the Rat Trap.
Right.
It was like the first play he ever wrote. And the thing like has so many different settings, you know, and what he wrote that thing in what, the '20s, I want to say.
It's, I mean, a he long was time like ago.
18 or something. And so he wrote this like crazy play with like all these different settings. So, hey, if it didn't stop Noel, then why should it stop anyone now?
Yeah. I mean, that's really true, you know, because I think sometimes the fear and expectation kind of cripples you.
Yeah.
And instead of the amount of times, you know, I've been to a few comic conventions, right? And just the question it always gets asked, so I come, oh, I want to write Daredevil. How do I get my script published? Right. And it's just like, oh, how can I get hired by Marvel? How can DC find me? And how, and like, no one asking those questions when asked, they've never gone, I'm just going to make something. I'm going to create my own character. I'll self-publish. Mm-hmm. Right. I'll create something to show how good I am. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm not going to let the confines that I see hold me back. I'm just going to do until, you know, I'm undeniable. And I think that's the thing that sometimes stops us from actually going, you know what, I've got these ideas, I'm gonna do something with them.
Yeah, I mean, dude, that's like totally it. And personally, that is a demon that I am constantly fighting back within myself of, you know, just being like, screw it. Like, what is the fear of, you know, you got to conquer the fear that prevents you from like trying in the first place, you know, and if it sucks, it's like, you can hang your head on the fact that you tried.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And I think if you put everything you have into the thing, even if it doesn't succeed, at least you gave it your all.
That's,
you know what I mean? But it's if you half-ass something and it fails, because, you know, that's always the thing, right? You don't put everything in, so then if it fails, it's like, well, I wasn't really doing my best, like, this reason, and it's just like, yo, but you kind of set yourself up to fail.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, you know, not to be crass about it, but, you know, sometimes I say, and I forget, I'm totally taking this from someone else, but sometimes you got to put your nuts on the chopping block, you know? And that's not even just in writing. That's just like in life. And
oh, for sure.
You're just never going to get anything out of anything if you don't just like wager it all and go for it.
Well, I mean, you've got a wife and two kids. So I'm sure there was that trepidation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
Well, you're dating her and then you're just like, oh, I want this girl to be my wife. Yes. And you know what I mean? Like, I get, you know, because I imagine you have a thought, I think she'll say yes, but you can never fully be sure. You could, like, I did it last year, and that you as you're asking the question, right, that you're thinking, this is a long pause, it might not even be a long pause, but in your head you're like, this is taking too long, wait, did I get this wrong, is this what's happening right now?
Yes, it's and then that just that takes you on a whole nother trajectory, you know, once she does say yes. And, you know, it adds a whole new bag of stakes into your life that you didn't think would be there, but it's great. It just adds mindfulness.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, man.
Yeah, man.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right. So you've got these scripts sitting on the shelf.
Yeah.
And the warm season is the one you pulled down.
Yeah.
Why that one? Right? Why not either of the other two?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it was a story that always captivated me. You know, I sort of dig these ideas of, you know, initially Clive was a guy, you know, he was like a 40 something guy. And, you know, he was kind of out in the middle. It was like originally in West Texas. New Mexico is very much like West Texas,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it's like one of these places you drive by where, you know, it's just like a single story 50 style road motel, you know, and you're like, Is it open? Is it not open? Like, are there like dead bodies in there? You know, and it's like this dude is out there like trying to like make this place work, you know? And then, you know, it's like he steps out his door and looks out at the desert. This was, you know, the original script and, you know, what I had in my head and what drew me to it. And, you know, it's like there's like this broken parking lot and then there's like a highway, a 2-lane highway that no one travels on except for maybe like 3 cars a day. And then on the other side of it, it's just desert, you know, and then like mountains like 100 miles away. And that's like what, you know, that main character looks at every day. And somehow, you know, despite that vast bleakness, you know, still going, still trying to fix up this place, still has this like dream in his heart. And, you know, so the landscape for me was very much, you know, like more of the story than anything, because it's like, what about that landscape speaks to that person, you know, that all that physical hopelessness. I mean, I love the desert. I think the desert is a fantastic place. You know, I it's beautiful and mysterious, and it is really a hard place to live. You know, when we filmed the movie, it was like absolutely brutal. You know, it was like 110 degrees out in New Mexico. It was just crazy. But, you know, it was just like what drew me to it is that this character is like in that place. And yes, he's from there, but what causes him to not only stay there, but to still try to persevere? And I guess maybe that just speaks to like, you know, human nature and I don't know. I think that's what I just kept coming back to. It's just such a evocative thing for me. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what led male Clive to become female Clive?
Well, I think for me, what led male Clive to become female Clive is that I think we've seen a lot of movies where there's a guy, you know, where it's about a guy trying to do something. And, you know, I don't think that's any less of a compelling story, but I think we've seen many stories of a man has a dream, you know, a man is not going to give up. And then furthermore, you know, Mitch originally was named Missy. And, you know, Missy was sort of, you know, very much like Mitch and was like, what in the world is going on here? And, you know, and I love you, but what are we doing out here? And, you know, Carlene was still there. So, you know, it was the same dynamic, but it was a more traditional approach to it that I think we've seen. And so when you turned it around and suddenly it's the woman who has this sort of dream that she can't quite, you know, speak about for whatever reason. And then, you know, now she has this husband who loves her and is supporting her while he's also doing his own thing. But he's, you know, he's like questioning, you know, has my wife just straight up lost her mind? Like, what, you know, what's going on here? I think there was actually just more fuel to that.
Yeah, I really liked that dynamic. Because a lot of times you'll have a film, female lead, but she needs saving, right? And supposedly it's a strong female lead and all of this, but at the end of the film, she still gets saved, right? She still can never do the thing without, you know, the husband, the boyfriend, the friend. And in this one, she's, you know, she owns the motel. She's not necessarily financially dependent on Mitch. You know, so she has all of these things of her own. And it's just like, if Mitch stays or goes, doesn't really matter, because she's still got all the things that she had. And I thought that was really, you know, we don't always see that.
Yeah. Well, that was a thing. I'll let you in on a little discussion that, you know, we had with Janet and I had, the director, who was fantastic. You know, there was this debate, and it is originally in the script that Mitch comes back at the end. And then as we were making the film, it became apparent of, you know, why would Mitch come back? You know, he's doing his thing and he's made his choice. Sort of, and it's a film about choices. And he's decided to leave. She's decided to stay. And that's not necessarily a judgment on their love. But, you know, if we're going to tell a story about a woman who has made this decision, it felt that it sort of undercut it for him to come back. And now everything's like happily ever after. Because life isn't like that. I mean, you know, people don't just magically, you know, reappear. There is a lot of sadness and there is a lot of isolation and loneliness, but there's also a great amount of tranquility and peace that comes with knowing that you found your purpose and you're living your mission for better or worse. And so I think that was the right call.
Oh man, because there was a moment and I'm like, okay, cool. I hope he doesn't turn up. I hope because, you know, a lot of times that's the thing that happens, right? And he turns up and then she's like, oh, I forgive you, Mitch. I love you. And he's like, I love you too, Clive. And then it's just like roll credits. And I'm just like, first up, you felt that he'd already made up his mind to leave. Even when the money, because at first it was just like, we're not making any money, we need to rent out, no one's renting. Then the money comes, but he still wants to go. So it's just like, regardless of what, he wanted to go. And it's like, if he came back, why? Because like, even though there is the love and all of that, I'd still feel a little bit let down. You know what I mean? If I was Clive. So it's just like, you don't want her to take him back if he did come back, or if they did get back together, it would be a long process. You know what I mean? So it was, I liked the way that ended
for sure, man, because I mean, in, you know, the movie's not really about love. You know, I mean, it is about love, maybe it's about, you know, just love in the sense of being like at ease with where you're at and who you are. But yeah, no, that was not the thing. So
yeah,
that's funny that you were on that wavelength too.
Well, yeah, you know, because this is the thing, right? I look at so many different films and sometimes you get the opportunity to talk to the creators behind the film, which is great. And I always want to do that, but you don't always get that opportunity because you're watching something and you can think to yourself, I think it's about this, right? You might be, because I've heard people talk about stuff. I mean, I love going to art galleries, because you have people, so sometimes you can tell they're on a date or something, right? Or someone trying to impress their friends, and they'll be like, no, what you can see the pain in this pit. See the brush strokes? Yeah, that's anxiety. And and then you've heard the artists talk about it, and they're like, it's just right. It's more a piece about love and a piece. And so the person is like, got it completely wrong, but they're like, boom, this is. So you talk about films and stuff and you think, this is what I think it is, but you're not quite sure. But I'm watching this and it felt like it's this journey, right? And it's about accepting the different parts of that journey, because she used to take photos and then she stopped. And it's like she stopped for these reasons, but she's hoping this thing right? If she finds this thing, it's going to bring back that to her. And it's just like, sometimes you just have to accept that you're going through this transition,
yeah,
right? And then you make it to the next spot, and then you've rebirthed that passion. And yeah, that's what it felt to me. It was more about this journey and like accepting, okay, this isn't my savior, right? I just have to persevere and I do this and I get here. And then that's what it felt like. But you know,
yeah,
what I mean?
That's, yeah, it. I mean, yeah, it's funny because even when the things, it screened in Milwaukee at the Milwaukee Film Fest, and I was there, and I did like a Q&A, and this woman, there were like a ton of people there, which was interesting at the Q&A, because normally people try to like dip out. But yeah, it was like 100+ people at this thing, and I'm just standing up there like, oh, hi guys. And anyway, so she asked this question. She's like, you know, I saw the film, like it was like The Wizard of Oz, and it was like Dorothy, you know, trying to make her way back home. And is that what you intended? And, you know, that's not what I intended necessarily, though maybe it is. But I was like, instead of really answering her, I was like, well, I just think that was like a really cool interpretation of what you saw. And I was, you know, and I was like, I think that's the beauty of film, that everyone can see something different and take something different from it. And each interpretation is just as valuable as the next. And, you know, and I think that's really powerful, and I love it. And it doesn't even necessarily matter what me or Janet are trying to say. If that's not what's coming through to someone, but something else is, like, bravo. Like, I love it. So, yeah.
Does it in, like, well, I was going to say infuriate, but maybe it's not infuriate, but it's just like, over the last few years, I've seen so many like websites, when a film comes out, it'd be like the ending of Thingy Explained. And yeah, you'll look at it and be like, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
Right. And again, like, you might hear the creatives talk about it, and they will say something completely, but these people are talking like they know. And they're like, oh, yeah, well, clearly when that happened, they mean this. And you're just like,
oh dude,
where did that come from? Like, what's happening? And why do we need the ending explained to us all the time?
Right. Well, dude, so I'm a huge, I don't know about you, but I'm like a huge Sopranos fan. I still think in my mind, that's like one, that's definitely one of my favorite shows still. And, you know, the ending of that is still just like talked about on YouTube, these YouTube channels. And I watched one the other day where they broke down the entire second part of the sixth season, and they're pointing to these little things and saying, this means this, and this means that. And, you know, you watch this for 25 minutes and you're like, oh my God, like, you are, I mean, maybe they're right. Maybe this is what it all means. But I'm like, maybe we could just sit back and not dissect it like it's a patient on a surgery table and just, I don't know. It's real. That's so funny that you say that, though.
Yeah, it just, I don't know, man. Like, yeah, it baffles me. That's right. Because I'm like, you can talk about a film or a TV show, and, you know, if you liked it, the things you liked, the things you didn't quite connect with. Yeah. But when you're trying to tell everyone, this is exactly what it meant, I'm just like, but you do not know. Like, you have not got a clue. So what are we doing?
It's sometimes the writer doesn't even know. Things come out and they are what they are.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, I know. But was that, you know, the way this film ended, did you kind of toy with any other, you know, end points of the film?
Yeah. So the original script, where it was male Clive, excuse me, I'm just getting over a little summer cold here. The original ending was that, you know, Carlene passes on, and, you know, Missy or Mitch has left, and Clive is sitting there, not sure what to do, faced with the prospect of, and there wasn't money in the original. So it was just this man left with, you know, staring reality in the face. And he very lovingly performed a funeral prayer and set the place on fire and hopped in his pickup truck and drove down the road with it burning in the background. And that was like, you know, and that was more of a metaphor of he was moving on.
Yeah.
You know, and then there was kind of like this weird moment where there's this guy in this old broke down pickup truck with, you know, a Coke bottle bifocals and, you know, pulls over on the side of the road and says, you know, excuse me, fella, I think your house is on fire. And, you know, Clive is just like, yep. And the guy just looks at Clive and says, okay. And just like continues on. And then Clive hops in his truck and goes the opposite direction and roll credits. you know, okay. A bit more like Coen Brothers, which I love the Coen Brothers, but I think that female Clive staying and sort of making peace with her environment in a new way was for me the more interesting, better choice, you know, because when you run from something, when you burn something and run away, you're actually like not necessarily solving anything. Because the problem's still there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing, because you know, she was there searching for this thing.
Yeah.
And then she kind of, you know, had that rediscovery of photography and everything. So it just felt her staying is her now embracing and really birthing this new thing.
Yeah.
Right? And living, you know, the dream. Right, the creative place, retreats. And so it just felt like, yeah, that's a nice way to kind of.
Yeah. But she captures the coyote. Yep. Exists with it. It's good.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, how did you connect with Janet?
So I connected with Janet through one of the producers, Julie Crosby. I worked with her in New York. She actually produced my last play, Original Sound, in 2019. So we obviously became, and it doesn't always happen, but we became very friendly through that experience. You can either become very friendly or you don't want to talk to each other ever again. But we became dear friends from that. And so when the process of getting the film up and running was happening, reached out to Julie, and Julie was thrilled to get involved and rally troops. And, you know, we were looking for a director. There was a previous director, didn't work out for a plethora of reasons. And, you know, it was like, well, Julie, you know, we need a director. So she had a wide network of connections in New York with female directors. I've always, I think I'd like to become a director too, but when I'm not directing, just writing stuff, I've always loved working with female directors. And I don't know if it's just because I, you know, feel you can learn more from a woman than from a guy. I don't know what it is, but I love female directors. So the objective was we need a great female director for this film. And she knew a whole bunch of people, shared the script. And she shared it with Janet, who she knew through this producing group, and Janet read it. And, you know, Julie's sort of like, okay, we'll probably never hear from her, but, you know, you just get it out there. And I think that Janet got in touch with Julie after like 2 days and was like, I'd like to talk some more. And so, yeah, it was kind of a surprising, it was a surprising thing. And I was really grateful that she received the script like she did. And, you know, she's a fantastic writer as well, and just story person. She worked at New Line Cinema, I think, for like 10 or 11 years as like their VP of programming. I mean, it was like some crazy job. And so she like discovered all these people in the 90s. One of them was David Russell. And I don't know that she necessarily just she might have discovered him. But anyways, she got some of his films made and ended up marrying him. So she was definitely this, she has a good eye for talent, and she's tremendously talented herself. So for her to like latch onto it and be like, I want this to be my next project was really humbling. You know, it was awesome.
And did she have any, you know, ideas around story? Like, were any story, like, things changed with her, you know, coming on a project?
Well, every director has eyes on story and thoughts on story. And I've learned that through playwriting too. But yeah, I think she did. And, you know, like I said, she's got a keen, she's got a keen sense of narrative, and you know, she is a remarkable writer in her own right. So, you know, we worked on developing the script for about, I'm going to say 4 months, three, 4 months. And the way that process worked was, you know, she would come to me with questions. You know, she'd be like, in this moment, you know, I'm questioning the intentions of Clive, you know, like an example, like the fight in the kitchen when Mick wants to leave and, you know, he wants to put, you know, Carlene in a home in West Alma and he wants to go to Santa Fe. And, you know, it was like the original version of that scene. You know, it was like maybe Mitch wasn't strong enough. Maybe Clive was a little bit too snarky. You know, it was just more about like identifying the emotional beats in every moment of the story. And so, you know, when you're like knee deep in that development process, which happens with every single script, you know, it's like, as much as you wish something could just be like perfect, it never is. And part of the fun is, you know, discovering and exploring. But yeah, I just think it's like, you know, you think you're doing all this work and you're like, oh, you know, it's like changing and it's different, but it's good. But then you look at the end process, the end product, as opposed to what you started with. And it's not necessarily all that different. You know, the story is the same. The characters are the same. It's just about really diving into the connective tissue. And I don't know if that's a Janet term, the connective tissue, or if that's a just, you know, industry-wide thing, but it really is about going into connective tissue and seeing what's there and ensuring that, you know, every emotional choice and moment is sound. And so I think we did that, and it made me a much better writer. And I am incredibly grateful to her for that tutelage.
Yeah, no, everything, like all those conversations and interactions, they felt honest, yeah. Right? It felt real, because sometimes you'll watch things and you're just like, no one talks like that.
Yeah.
Right. Is that an example I always get uses, like things like Dawson's Creek, right, where everyone talks in these flowing soliloquies and it's just like no one. And you, like, at that young age, you have some people who know some big words, right, and they always try to, and some are using the wrong way or they're just not making any sense. So having every single person talk the same way, it's just like, I'm not eyeing it, man. That's and the arguments are silly, and you have these, you know, in different films and stuff, you have the couples get into these arguments, and it's just like the argument feels like these people don't even know each other, or they haven't been together for 20 years because they are really destroying each other, and supposedly they're in this loving city. And I'm just like, if you're really in that, you're not trying to completely destroy your partner like that. So it just feels weird. With this one, it just, I like the way everything flowed and these interactions, because you could see both people's sides of the argument.
Well, cool, that's awesome, dude. Kevin, I hate to say, my son is a little ill today and he's in the other room. I don't know if you can even hear him.
I did hear a little bit.
Okay, I'm sorry. I think parenthood calls.
Okay, right. No worries.
But this was awesome, man.
This has been great, man. Okay. And we've been speaking for over 40 minutes. So that's,
I know. Yeah, it's been great.
You know what I mean? I didn't even think it was that long.
Could do it another 40 if my son wasn't losing his mind.
No worry. But just before you go, let people know where they can follow you and any place where the film might be screening next.
Oh, sure. Well, I think the film's going to be taken to market now. You know, it's with Savant Artists. And so this guy, Sebastian Tuardo, is going to be shopping it. So hopefully it'll be entering the streaming market soon. But otherwise, I'm on Instagram. I forget my handle because I just started it with the film. I think it's like Adam Sai or something. That's
A underscore.
Yeah.
Something.
It's something like, rather.
Yeah.
I'm sort of like not on social media at all. But I hope this film hits the world soon, and I hope that that we get another one going soon.
Oh, that would be great, man. And when you do, definitely come by and have a conversation. Cool. And maybe stop by another time and we can talk rap. Common Chicago, man. So you had loads of cats coming out of that scene.
And I interviewed Wu-Tang Clan at the Metro Theater. Shit. I mean, yeah, so I've got stories, so that could be part two.
All right, man. Awesome.
Cool. All right, brother.
Thanks for stopping by, man. Appreciate it.
Really appreciate it. Okay, all right. Bye-bye.
Enjoy your day.
Yeah.
Bye. Okay, so there we go. I told you it was great, right? Adam was so enjoyable to talk to. And we just, we didn't even get to so many things, right? Like the rap journalism, which, really wanted to get to. And just other, like, components of creating films, right? But, you know what I mean? If you were listening properly, he's coming back, man. He's gonna come back. So we'll cover a lot of that other stuff then. But people, if you haven't seen it, definitely look to check out The Warm Season. So there's a link to the review, and on that webpage will be all the dates. So yeah, look for it. Check it out. If you haven't checked out part one, go do that. And we'll see you next time. Peace.